Translation. Once after the uprooting of the Yamala Arjuna trees, Rohini Devi went to call Rama and Krishna, who had both gone to the riverside and were playing with the other boys with deep attention. Purport. Mother Yashoda was more attached to Krishna and Balaram than Rohini Devi was, although Rohini Devi was the mother of Balaram. Mother Yashoda sent Rohini Devi to call Rama and Krishna from their play, since it was the right time for lunch. Therefore, Rohini Devi went to call them, breaking their engagement in play. Amagyana Tamrindasya Gyananjana Shilakya Chakshur Milita Minatasma Shri Guruvaya Namaha Kam Kroti Vachalam Pangam Langaite Girim Yatripatam Hamvande Shri Gurundina Taranam Namom Vishnupraya Krishna Pstai Bhutale Shimate Hridananda Goswam Nita Namine Namom Vishnupraya Krishna Pstai Bhutale Shimate Shivaram Swam Nita Namine Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Sabhadli Shimete Bhakti Vedanta Swami Vitanamane Namaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Prashkacharya Shtarne Vande Shri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodito Gurudai Prashpanvanto Chitro Shando Tanamo Nudro. I offer my humble obeisances unto Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who have risen over the horizon of Gaudadesh just like the sun and the moon, to wonderfully bestow benediction upon all and to dissipate the darkness of ignorance. Sarittiragatam Krishnam Bhagnarjunam Atavayat Ramam Cha Rohini Devi Kridantam Balakair Bisham. Once after the uprooting of the Yamala Arjuna trees, Rohini went to call Ram and Krishna, who had both gone to the riverside and were playing with the other boys with deep attention. So I'd just like to ask for the goodwill and the mercy and the attention of the Vaishnavas so that I can say something which is interesting, useful, and stimulating. So this verse is following on from the pastime of the liberating of Nalakuvara and Manigriva. And there's a very smooth, if this was literature, it would be applauded for how it's smoothly transitioning from one pastime to another. It's more than just literature, of course. This is transcendental. But we can still take note of how Manigriva and Nalakuvara had started off being very, very proud. They were proud because they had all these opulences. They had attractive features. They had wealth. Actually, it's summed up in Queen Kunti's verse, Janmaishvarya Shruta Shribir. They were learned. Janma, high parentage. Their father was Kuvera. But what spoiled it all was that they were proud. Opulences, we know from the pastime in Krishna book between, which involved King Baholashva and Shrutadev, the poor Brahmin, that wealth is not a disqualification. In some sort of stereotyped concepts of what spiritual life consists of, it's thought that if you're rich, then like Jesus would say that a wealthy person cannot, he had some saying there, I can't remember it exactly, that it's harder for a wealthy man to come to heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle? Yeah? It's harder for a rich person to make it to heaven because people become enamored of their riches, and just as what happened to Nalakuvara and Manigriva, they became proud. And really what we can say, that's really not quite accurate. What we can say is that it's harder for a proud person to attain the spiritual planets. It's harder for them to attain that than it is to thread a camel through the eye of a needle. They needed to be purified of this pride. And so they were placed as, they were reincarnated as twin Yamala Arjuna trees in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, so that they could actually see how relationships can be conducted without pride, without this spoiling element of pride. So they were there, and they were there for so many years observing the beautiful rasas that are enjoyed between the residents of Vrindavan. By doing that, they became purified. It's not possible to become purified by, you know, your own endeavor. Hare Krishna Prabhu. It's not a material thing. You know, in terms of, the concept of purification, if it's in the context of a material environment, then you have certain instruments that you can use, material instruments for purifying material environments, cleaning products. You know, you can hoover the floor, you can get some water and detergent and scrub, and you can clean things and purify areas, material areas. But in terms of spiritual areas, such as the consciousness, then there's another process. And that entails basically connecting with Krishna directly or indirectly. So so this verse is explaining about how the cowherd boys would play together, and the subsequent verses, how they would play together in such transcendental bliss, and there was no inebriety in their relationship. There was no ego in the relationships between the cowherd boys. And that's beautifully described in verses to come. But what we're seeing here is that Mother Yashoda, it's the right time now for Krishna and Balaram to eat, prasadam time. She's sending Rohini to call them. But the cowherd boys don't respond to Rohini's entreaties to come back for lunch. And why is that? They're having too much fun. And they're too, it says here in the verse, they're playing with deep attention. They're playing with deep attention. There's a saying that if it's not fun, don't take it seriously. So the boys, they're taking very seriously their fun. They don't want anybody to interfere with it or undermine it. They're protecting their fun. So Rohini goes to call them for lunch, but they just ignore her, and they just carry on playing. And then it's said that is it in the next verse? Yeah, well, in this verse, Mother Yashoda was more attached to Krishna and Balaram than Rohini. So when Rohini went back, she said to Mother Yashoda that, you've got more love for these boys. Maybe you'll have a better chance than me because your love is unprecedented. And so then Mother Yashoda goes, first of all, I'll just read one passage so that we have a little atmosphere to know what the mothers are contending with when they're trying to call their kids in for lunch, what they're up against, how difficult it is. So, this is from Shivaramaraja's Nava Vraja Mahima. It's describing just how much fun these boys are having. So, okay, I'll read from here. The boys arrived at Bandiravat tree with great flurry and fanfare. They decorated the branches of that great banyan tree with their colorful lunch packs, sticks, turbans, and upper cloths. The morning's entertainment began with Subal, Arjuna, Krishna, and Balaram staging a dance performance, accompanied by other boys who sang and kept time with their hands, horns, and bamboo sticks. Sometimes all four boys would dance at once, sometimes just two or three of them, and sometimes one would dance by himself. When it was Krishna's turn to dance alone, his skill was mesmerizing. Balaram was so inspired that he could not restrain himself. He jumped on stage to join Krishna as if possessed, while the boys clapped approvingly and praised them, who are a mystery to even the Vedas. Balaram and Krishna appeared like the moon moving behind black clouds, and their movements reflected the sunlight, which made it appear that lightning was flashing around the moon and the clouds. The dancing stopped after some time, and the cowherd boys offered their own jewelry in admiration. But Krishna said, "The only payment we request is that you accept our challenge to wrestle." These words elicited a roar of excitement from the gopas, but before they could even rise to their feet, Krishna and Balaram were amongst them, singling out contestants and giving joy by their touch. Soon, the entire area beneath Bandiraka had become a giant wrestling arena in which boys were pairing off, grappling with opponents and charging at one another like young bulls. The gopas' groans, shouts, and grunts drowned out the sound of the wind and lapping waves. They punched at each other, slapped their arms together, and struck one another's chest with full force. As Sridham sat astride Krishna, hitting his friend with his fists, did the Lord feel pain or pleasure? Sridham's blows felt more like an offering of flowers due to the nature of their affectionate relationship. Krishna revels in any loving service rendered by his devotees, be it through praying, wrestling, or flirting. About Bhishma Dev fighting with Krishna, for example, Srila Prabhupada writes, "Thus, his throwing of sharp arrows at the body of the Lord is as good as the worship of another devotee who throws soft roses upon him. The Lord enjoyed the wounds created by his great devotee." Eventually, the boys grew tired of fighting. To regain their energy, they crowded onto the swings that hung from the branches of Bandiraka and challenged one another to see who could swing the highest. Krishna and Balaram sat on one swing, four boys stood on another, and six on yet another, all flying through the air as if to challenge the soaring of the many parrots that chattered as they watched the fun. Suddenly Krishna leapt off his swing, ran to a nearby amalaki tree, collected an armful of fallen fruits, and began pelting the boys, who swung back and forth like moving targets in a shooting gallery. Unable to withstand Krishna's attack or to resist the challenge now before them, the boys all leapt to the ground, ran to the nearby fruit trees, and also started throwing fruit at anyone or anything that moved. The sound of the melee attracted the cows who had been grazing nearby, but when they came too close, they too were bombarded with fruit, so that they retreated to a more distant and peaceful pasture. With the trees surrounding Bandiraka now picked clean of fruit, a new game began. Krishna and Balaram pretended that they were two kings, and the gopas divided into two groups of subjects. The cowherd boys established their borders and ruled their kingdoms. But a territorial dispute soon brought a declaration of war, a march to battle, a fight, defeat, and a peace accord. Eventually, the boys tired of playing politics and warfare and decided instead to amuse themselves with other games, such as imitating animals, playing ball, telling riddles, running races of various descriptions. About this day, Sri Shuka says, In this way, Krishna and Balaram played all sorts of well-known games as they wandered among the rivers, hills, valleys, bushes, trees, and lakes of Vrindavan. While Krishna and Balaram played, demigods like Shiva and Narada disguised themselves to play as cowherd boys, to cheer the two brothers on and to directly taste the ecstasy of their pastimes. Why were the demigods in disguise? They wanted to avoid interrupting Krishna's play. Had they come to their original forms, the gopas would have stopped to offer respect to the celestials. So, I think that very nicely and vividly portrays just how their playing is completely absorbing them. And there's no mental platform there at all. They're just in that eternal realm. They say time flies when you're having fun. And when the fun is transcendental, it becomes eternal. This is the kind of the relativity of time. If we're suffering, then time drags. It goes very, very slowly. If we're having fun, we don't even notice it passing by. And when time is transcendental, it becomes that, what's described in Bhagavad Gita as that supreme eternal atmosphere. The Satchitananda realm. So what interested me, I was curious to sort of try and meditate on was when you read things like that Sridham and Krishna are wrestling, and Sridham's punching Krishna, he's defeating him, and the other boys they're wholeheartedly, you know, they're throwing fruits at each other. And I know when I used to play at that age, and have similar sort of escapades, like throwing things and wrestling, eventually someone would start crying. Eventually someone would cross the line, would just go over the line and just like, either become too aggressive, too nasty, some little inebriety would enter in. Competitiveness, you know. The cowherd boys, when they play, it's extremely competitive. But it never goes over the line. So why is it that it never goes over the line? How is it that nobody, relationships don't deteriorate and relationships don't deteriorate? Why isn't it that doesn't happen? That's the question I was asking myself when I was looking at this section of the Bhagavatam. And I was talking to one friend of mine up in Edinburgh. His name's Ekanath, and I was asking him, what's your view on this? And he was saying, he gave a very nice answer, actually, which I'll try and represent. What Ekanath said was that these rasas, Shantaras, Dasyaras, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, and Madhurya Ras, they're a little bit like Russian dolls in a way, because with these, I think they're called balalaika Russian dolls, something like that. What happens is you got this little doll, and then when you open it, there's one inside. And then when you pull that one out and you open that one, there's another little doll inside that one. So, Within, we have Shantaras, then we have Sakyaras. Shantaras is within Sakyaras. Within Dasyarath. And within Sakyaras, which is what these boys are in, within Sakyaras is Shantaras and Dasyaras. They're contained within that ras. And then Vatsalyaras contains the other three rasas, and Madhurya Ras contains all of the rasas. So Shantaras is when you're admiring and you're relishing and admiring and appreciating. And then Dasya is where you're simply this service mentality. So Ekanath was saying that these boys in Sakyaras, they've got such a strong foundation of just admiring Krishna and appreciating him and the service mood. That is the bottom line, and that never shifts, it never wavers. That's a constant reference. So they never forget that. They never forget that Krishna is the center. And they never forget that they're the servant of Krishna. Even in the midst of the most intense competition, that remains a reference point. So that they don't get intoxicated at any point. So that things become mundane. So that they develop a mundane mentality that I'm, you know, in charge around here. They never get in, the power never goes to their head. So that was what he was saying, that the relationships never fall into a mundane level of interaction because of this their love for Krishna never is ruined by their ego taking over. So if our love for Krishna is also to remain pure, then we have to somehow guard ourselves we have to also keep our consciousness pure, like the cowherd boys. Their consciousness is always pure, it's always in a service mood, and they guard their consciousness from having any mundane interference. So that's really what we have to do also. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam that says, Indriyer Visha Krishner Akshiptam Jaitam Manaha Chetanas Harate Bude Stambam Toyam Iva Hridat. So Indriya means your senses, and Vishaya means the sense objects. So, and mana is in this verse as well, the mind and the senses, and then there are sense objects. So what it's saying is that when the mind and the senses are attracted to sense objects for enjoyment, then the mind becomes agitated. And it says then, Chetanas Harate Bude. Then one's real consciousness can almost become lost. You know, we know from Bhagavad Gita, the Jayato Visham Pumsam, you meditate on something, you develop attachment. From attachment comes lust. From lust comes, what is it? Speak up? Anger. Yeah. And then eventually bewilderment of memory, when memory is lost, eventually it's all lost. So it says that one's real consciousness almost becomes lost. One's real consciousness is Krishna consciousness. One's Krishna consciousness can almost become lost. If we meditate on sense objects for our enjoyment, we're starting to think, we're the enjoyer, we're the controller. The cowherd boys never, you know, they never actually fall into the illusion that they're the enjoyer and they're the controller, because everything's for Krishna's pleasure, ultimately. As you know, they'll play the role of the controller and enjoyer simply for Krishna's pleasure, but not independent of that. In order to enhance Krishna's pleasure, they'll also play the role of the enjoyer and the controller. It's not against the law, as long as it's going to please Krishna. So it's only when we're trying to be the controller and enjoyer, independent, or independent of Krishna's pleasure, or even sometimes in opposition to Krishna's pleasure. And that's what happens in the material world. People are trying to enjoy and trying to control, even though it's contrary to Krishna's pleasure. It's not enhancing Krishna's pleasure, it's contrary to that. The last line of that verse that I quoted, Stambam Toyam Iva Hridat, it gives an analogy. It says it's just like sometimes in a lake that's bordered by grass straws, those grass straws can suck the water of that lake. And then it seems, all the water is in the straws. At certain times of the year, the grass straws suck the water of a shallow lake. So in the same way, Maya can suck our consciousness. We can become Maya conscious instead of Krishna conscious. It can suck all of our Krishna consciousness up so that there's none left. It's a figurative way of putting it. Another reference I'll just make before opening the floor for questions is, in one class, Radhanath Swami said that Prabhupada many times he's stating that the Srimad Bhagavatam is written in such a way that if we read it from the first canto progressively and sequentially through to the 10th canto, then we won't become we won't misunderstand Krishna's relationship with the gopis, because we'll understand, we'll have that sambandha jnana, that understanding of who Krishna is, the almightiness of Krishna, the grandeur of Krishna, and the omnipotence of Krishna. And so then we can start to read about Krishna's relationship with the gopis in that context. So it's the same thing here, that if we're to really appreciate this, rasa, if we're to really enter these rasas, this sakya ras Krishna has with the gopas, then we have to first of all understand who Krishna is. And understand Krishna's qualities in the context of being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And having understood that, then we can understand who Krishna is when he's just playing with the cowherd boys. My last point is that there's one other aspect of this notion, that because the cowherd boys have got this foundation of Shantaras and Dasyaras, therefore they don't. Their relationship is always preserved on that transcendental level. One other point on that is, we have in the Bhagavad Gita this verse, Yesham Twantagatam Papam Jana Nam Punya Karmanam Te Dvandva Mohanir Mukta Bhajantimam Dridavrataha. So it's saying that when Yesham Twantagatam Papam, all the sinful activities have been eradicated. Jananam punya karmanam. One's performed pious activities in this life and previous life, all their sinful activities are over. Then that person becomes freed from the duality of delusion and engages in my service with great determination, bhajantimam dridavrata. So it's saying that all your sinful activities, you have to have no more sinful propensities. And you have to have established this, you know, in this life and in previous lives, this piety. Now, in the Bhagavatam, it says there's a famous little phrase, kritta punya punja, that these cowherd boys, over, you know, it doesn't say how many, but it just implies practically unlimited lifetimes of pious activities. They performed practically unlimited pious activities over so many lifetimes in order to get this privilege of being a cowherd boy playing with Krishna in Vrindavan, having this sort of fun that I was reading just earlier. So this is in the Gita. It's saying that when it becomes your default position that you're pious, and it's your default position that you don't do anything sinful, you start to become qualified to enter into Krishna's pastimes. That becomes your default position. Now, I heard one time, I might have even heard it from Sada, because he knows all about combat. There's a group called the Navy SEALs, and they have this kind of motto that no one ever rises to the occasion. It's not possible that you can rise to the occasion. All that's possible in the moment of truth is that we fall to our default position. Which means it's whatever's become your second nature, that's what comes out in the moment of truth. What's your second nature? What's your, you know, what spontaneously comes out? And what they're saying in the Navy SEALs, we have to be so trained that when the pressure is on, you know, we automatically know what to do. You're not going to just suddenly, you know, do something you've never done before. In the general, you know, the general rule is that, you know, what's in you is going to come out. So it's important is what's in us, the internal level, is what's important. And because Krishna consciousness can't be, you know, you can't bluff your way back to Godhead. It's got to be there, assimilated, fully assimilated, if we're to get back to Godhead. So that's what the cowherd boys, they've done these unlimited lifetimes of pious activities, kritta punya punja. And, you know, their love for Krishna is their default position. It's automatic. They don't have to contrive it. They don't have to think it up or, you know, feel that, well, I'm obliged to sort of behave like this because this is where I am. There's no sense of obligation. It's simply spontaneously there, this love for Krishna and this exclusive meditation on how to please Krishna. I'll surrender to anything that will please Krishna. So that's what makes the relationship, the rasa, so beautiful and enchanting. And so I'll finish on that point. If there's any comments or any questions...